some good signs for housing.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the economy as trading gets started for the day. Just a few minutes into it, we're going to ask, where's Wall Street? Yes, the sad music. The S&P down about 0.33%. The NASDAQ down 0.5%. Same for the Dow, off about 50 points right now at 10,400. European shares lower by about 0.5% as well. And stocks closed down in Asia today as well. The Chinese benchmark off about 3.5%. It's the second day in a row we've gotten some positive news about the housing market. Today, the Case-Shiller Home Price Index is giving us a glimpse of where homeowners and buyers were at the end of September. Prices rose for the fourth straight month that month, and Marketplace's John Dimsdale is with us live from our Washington Bureau with a preview. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
So what do you see?
Well, in general, home prices have now been rising for nearly half a year, and that's an indication that the industry that was hit so hard at the beginning of the recession is coming out of a deep downturn. Falling prices for nearly 3 years were responsible for putting so many homebuyers either into or close to foreclosure. So even with these price hikes, nearly one out of four homebuyers remains underwater, meaning their mortgage is higher than the value of their home. And that just shows how much froth there was in the market before the recession. But after looking at today's numbers, Mike Moran at CE Daiwa Securities says things are looking up.
Many buyers see this as an attractive time to purchase a home because interest rates are quite low. And after declines that we've seen in the prior 2 years, they're starting to see value in housing as an investment.
Hey, John, so how do September's numbers compare with the jump we saw in home prices earlier this summer?
Well, the improvements are beginning to level off. September's increase was 0.3%. That compares to percentage or more increases over the more active summer months. But Moran says that a slower increase is to be expected in the fall, and he thinks it means that the improvements will be more sustainable.
All right. Marketplace's John Dimsdale in Washington. John, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. The other piece of economic news the market's looking at this morning, the revision of the nation's gross domestic product, the GDP, for the third quarter. If we reported filet mignon last month, today it's looking more like sirloin. Still tasty, but a little tough. The revised GDP came in at 2.8%, down from the original 3.5%. Julie Niemann, an analyst at Smith Moore & Company, is with us on the line live from St. Louis. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So why the downward turn?
Well, probably the biggest things, the big negative, strong imports, read oil on that, a higher price coming in. Certainly not the volumes, but the pricing is higher. And then the other big negative is very weak commercial construction. We know that story. Bottom line is, though, the government stimulus is the only reason you're seeing any kind of consumer spending and housing pickup. The government is the lender and spender of last resort. And right now, that is the sole source of why we're seeing a little bit of growth.
All right, Julie, part of the GDP report shows that consumer spending was less robust than initially reported. I mean, how much of that consumer spending was due to the government taking steps to support the consumer?
Well, a large part of it is simply the replacement cycle that you're looking at, and the stimulus really isn't going to kick in very heavily until next year. What it did was keep it from collapsing, and of course you had retailers with very lean inventories trying to push anything out the door. How much further consumption you're going to get? No, the consumer is in a real protection mode here. They're trying to build the savings, trying to make sure that they're hedged against the biggest thing still coming, jobs. They're concerned about jobs, and you're not going to see an increase in consumption until there's some signs of hope on the job side.
And I want to switch gears quickly, Julie, talk a little bit about another story we're watching. There are reports of the Fed has asked 9 of the big banks that receive government capital injections for their plans on how to repay the government. I mean, why would the government begin asking for this money at a time when there's still so much concern about banks being undercapitalized?
Oh, you're right. Payback is a bummer here, but Geithner wants to turn around and start getting that $142 billion TARP money down, going to these 9 banks. They want to escape the restrictions. By the restrictions, I mean salary and bonus. But the plan is the key thing. If they come out with some kind of a plan, whether they abide by it or not, at least that creates a little bit of confidence in the marketplace. Then they can go, what they need to do is to sell stock and to sell debt to the public markets and shore up that capital base. The big question, though, and it's everybody's question, what's in the bad loan box that's coming down the pike now? Nobody knows at this point.
Julie Niemann in St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, November 24th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Anti-piracy laws in Sweden appear to be paying off. Music sales in the Scandinavian country have jumped dramatically since a crackdown on illegal file sharing. More from the Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard in London.
Over the past 5 years, global music sales have slumped by a third, but suddenly Sweden has bucked the trend. Sales there have soared, up 18% this year. Two key factors could be at play. Sweden passed a new law earlier this year, making it easier to prosecute illegal file sharing. And a court convicted the operators of the Pirate Bay file sharing site. Adrian Strain is a record industry spokesman.
The combination of those two events, we think, has helped bolster the legitimate music market, and I think that's quite an important case study for the rest of the world.
He says there's been a similar development in South Korea. Music sales have also risen there following a crackdown. He says it's far too soon to call the end of illegal downloading, but Sweden's experience is encouraging. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Commercial landlords everywhere are suffering as retailers suffer themselves. A drop in customers means stores are closing or renegotiating their leases at lower rents. Turns out that in New York City, a landlord's pain is good for so-called pop-up stores, temporary retail outlets that usually come and go within a matter of weeks. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
New York City has plenty of empty retail space right now. Sam Shandan of Real Estate Econometrics says that's a landlord's worst nightmare.
Landlords value occupancy very highly.
He says that means they often make concessions on rent to ensure they can keep the space filled.
But they may also make concessions in terms of what they would have perceived as being the ideal tenant.
The ideal tenant would normally be willing to sign a multi-year lease. Menswear label Kai D is somewhere in between. It opened a pop-up store in Lower Manhattan earlier this fall. Kai D designer Aaron Odell says they recently extended their lease for another 13 months. Odell says they lucked out on the price.
I definitely think that with so many spaces open, we negotiated into a deal that was beneficial to us and within our budget.
He says they'd love to stay, but part of that depends on how quickly shoppers reopen their wallets and how liberally they spend. The faster consumers get back to their old ways, the sooner landlords are likely to raise rents. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Providian Financial, which was bought by Washington Mutual and then later bought by Chase, offered credit to people who generally couldn't get it. But a lot of the time, it was a ticket to chronic debt. Shailesh Mehta was Providian's CEO for more than a dozen years. He's never spoken to the press about the company, but he agreed to talk with reporter Lowell Bergman for a Frontline documentary airing tonight on PBS.
I got a Visa Gold with a $1,000 credit line. People treat you differently when you have a gold card.
And with Providian, my credit just keeps getting better.
Visa from Providian. We approve.
Providian targeted riskier customers who had never before qualified for a credit card. Shailesh Mehta, the former CEO, says his goal was to provide all Americans with a credit card. In fact, as far as he was concerned, those least able to pay off their balance were the best customers.
So what you were going after were the people who weren't going to pay their bill off in full.
Or in full, yeah.
Right.
If we do so, then we will be attracting the profitable segment of the credit card industry.
Your hope was to keep them paying basically in perpetuity, right?
They're,
you never wanted them
yeah,
to really pay
if,
it off.
If they make the minimum payment, yes, then that loan will take almost 20 years to pay back, absolutely.
And you make more money then?
We make more money.
Providian developed an array of tactics to lure customers, such as so-called free cards. These had no annual fee, but came with all kinds of stealth charges attached.
When people make the buying decision, they don't look at the penalty fees because they never believe they'll be late. They never believe they'll be over limit, right? So everybody increased the late fees. Everybody started increasing the over limit fees.
Last May, Congress passed legislation intended to end practices that deceive customers. But most of the new rules don't take effect until February. And then, Mehta says, card companies will find a way around them.
Bankers will figure it out to comply. As long as I'm in compliance with what the government says, it's none of anybody's business to tell me what to do. You know, and there are always some desperate people who will take the product. Lending money to people is never a difficult exercise. Okay, people will take money if you're willing to give them.
Mehta left Providian in 2001, but he's still pushing plastic. He's investing in the booming credit card industry in India. And here in America, he shifted his attention to what he reckons is the next big thing, prepaid debit cards. I'm Lowell Bergman for Marketplace.
India's Prime Minister Manmohan Singh is doing all the usual things while visiting the United States. There's, of course, the state dinner he'll attend at the White House tonight. He'll be meeting with President Obama, where economic ties and climate change will be high on the agenda. But updating India's military is a big issue for American aerospace companies. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports billions of dollars could be up for grabs.
India plans to spend $10 billion on new fighter jets for its military. Boeing and Lockheed Martin are both vying for the contract. Other countries are competing too. The Russians used to be India's primary source for combat aircraft. Equity analyst Anil Dhaka with Morningstar says the Russians are working hard to keep their client and sell India some MiG-35 jets.
They are taking all the steps they could to win this contract. They actually flew that aircraft nonstop from Moscow to Bangalore, where they were demonstrating the aircraft for the first time.
Even if a U.S. company wins the multi-billion dollar contract, Dhaka says it wouldn't mean much in terms of employment.
I really doubt if it's going to create new jobs. It's more of a sustenance of jobs for the people working on that F-16 production line than any new jobs, actually.
Dhaka says Pakistan flies F-16s, which could prejudice India against them. He thinks the Europeans have the most advanced technology, which gives them an edge in the fighter jet competition. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
The head of the Consumer Product Safety Commission said this morning her agency hadn't acted as quickly as it should have on baby crib safety problems. Cribs with drop-down sides are being recalled because of the potential for infant harm. One public official on Long Island, New York, is so concerned about these cribs that he'll sign legislation today banning them from stores. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
Wayne Horsley is a legislator in Suffolk County, New York. His bill will be signed into law today. It bans the sale of drop-down cribs in the county. Horsley sponsored the legislation after hearing horror stories from parents.
One of the couples that lost a child that spoke to me told me that they would rather have their baby in a cardboard box than to have them in a drop-side crib.
The Crib Manufacturers Trade Association says 20% of cribs sold in the U.S. have a drop-down side. The association says they're perfectly safe as long as they're assembled and maintained properly. But Allison Bhadracharya isn't taking any chances. She says her 8-month-old daughter will get a new crib if her current crib is recalled.
She has a tendency to kick and do all sorts of things, and my imagination could lead to the worst possible outcomes.
In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, you may have heard of Susan Boyle. She's that Scottish singer from the show Britain's Got Talent, whose rendition of I Dreamed a Dream caused a YouTube sensation to the tune of 32 million hits. 32 million. Well, she's in the United States now promoting her new album, which goes on sale today. She even had a half hour on NBC's Today Show. Now another singer is interested in helping Subo, that's what people are calling her now. The 61-year-old head thrasher from Detroit, Alice Cooper, told a British TV newscast he'd like to write a song for Boyle. Maybe down the road they can share a little makeup, too. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.